Approaching on a 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. On at 15 seconds, guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Am I recording now? Am I recording now?
I am.
Yeah. I was just listening to the new Jim Semivan interview. Pretty interesting.
Which one?
On aliens and artists.
Oh, okay. I haven't listened to that one yet either.
Where he can... I'm the guy that discovered him, and I'm trying to catch up on all the people he's talking to that... He actually refers to the beings that were like the Michelin men. I knew that before, but he reveals that in this interview. So, interesting.
Ooh, see, that makes me think of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that Dan Aykroyd wrote into Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
From his highly paranormal parents.
Interesting. Are we getting some feedback here? Who's getting feedback?
That's me. We're now live on YouTube, so if you want me to share it, you guys can go ahead and start talking, and I'll start sharing.
You're going to put it on my Facebook?
I will share it to you and let it know when I share it, or I'll tag you both in it so it shows up on your Facebooks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So, Jimmy, we had originally intended to do a broadcast, a message, but you've got some wind there. So describe that situation in terms of the message that will be sent down the road.
Yes. Thank you, Grant. So, yeah, we had the intention was to broadcast a message tonight throughout the solar system with my large radio station here in Arizona. Unfortunately, the wind is very, very strong today. With wind gusts up to 30, 40 miles an hour. That's too strong to obviously elevate the antennas. You know, at high elevation, it will destroy the antenna system. So I need to keep them parked. But we have, I have a message that's ready, and then we're gonna, you know, reschedule to find another date. A message comprised. You know, I will show it when we broadcast it. I will show the details, you know, what's it contained in the message. But there's a lot of material in there. So we'll present the message once we transmit.
Give for people who may be tuning in for the first time, we've done a number of these. We've got a fair number of people that have watched your broadcast. But just for people, can you give a little background on how this works and where you discovered it and what this is all about? Because people may not understand this idea of messaging. And just for your information, I did contact James Smith. I didn't hear back from him. That's Wilbur Smith, who ran the Canadian program, who was working on radio communications. And I told that his son, and I'm not sure if the son is still alive, but I said, you should know there's somebody continuing your father's work. So describe what you're doing in terms of messaging and sort of a brief story on how you discovered this.
Sure. Well, I started really in 2017 to do contact work. You know, it started really because initially I do have a very large radio station here and equipment. I've been an amateur radio operator since childhood, and I've been building antennas all my life and kept, you know, gathering equipment, very high power equipment, and make my own antennas and so on. And in 2017, I had heard about people doing making contact, and or so-called C5, human initiated contact. And so I became very interested, and I had my own experience with the mystical world, if you will, and And so I was even more intrigued, of course, and I knew that we're not alone. There was no way in the world that we're alone. So I decided to repurpose the equipment in 2017 and broadcast messages throughout the solar system in an attempt to make contact. And to my surprise, the very first attempt that I made, I got a reply. And so initially I didn't know it was a reply because I needed to eliminate all possibilities of false positives first, but it clearly it was a reply, and following that I started having sightings and all kind of high strangeness and experience and so on. So you know, that's how my story started. And so and later on, I very shortly after that, I shared, of course, this this contact modality with other experiencers and kind of found a way to scale it down a little bit, you know, and use just regular small handheld radios for the folks out there who don't have the large equipment that I have. So this method, really using simple handheld radios, works as well. And the physics is very simple. You know, when we broadcast messages in free space or in space, if you will, even with a small handheld radio with only, you know, 4 to 8 watts, that signal will travel tens of thousands of miles into space. In fact, the signal will reach the moon. If we broadcast here with a small handheld radio, that signal will reach the moon and beyond. And this is with human technology, with man-made technology. We can just imagine with ET technology, you know, how far this signal can be detected. And so the physics is very straightforward. It's really not surprising in a sense because we're broadcasting these messages or being heard and decoded by non-human intelligences. And they, you know, if it is safe and appropriate for them, they will interact back with, you know, the experiencer who's sending an invitation message. So it's really, you know, generally speaking here, the you know, what's behind this first contact protocol.
Yeah, and over the years you've gotten people that have joined you, and you're doing all sorts of different modalities. People are trying different things and people have had success, correct?
Absolutely. This contact modality has been utilized and tested successfully worldwide by a lot of experiencers, you know, from New Zealand, Australia, Europe, Canada, the United States, and Japan, so all over the place. And it's very consistent. People were doing the work seriously and you know, with the right intent, they are successful. I mean, 100% of the people I know who've done this seriously, they've been successful. So it's clearly working, and we've been able to gather, and myself personally gather a lot of evidence, video evidence, over the years doing this work, and that's what I'm, you know, sharing today. And most recently, this adventure, if you will, this journey started drifting in different directions, and now it's drifting into sacred geometry and. You know, a better understanding of the world, the Earth grid or the world grid, and so on. So it's going in very interesting directions. I have a very interesting footage tonight, which is going to show that. So I'm very excited to present the material tonight.
Yeah. Just one more little background, and then we'll see if Nicole's got something. You basically, a lot of this geometry stuff came from your sort of decoding the first message coming back, because that was the first thing when I saw the messages you're sending out and this stuff coming back, and it was like, well, what are they saying? And you did decode one, and that led to this mathematics, which I think is kind of critical. It sort of shows that the universe is very finely tuned and everything is connected to everything, and all these messages, my interpretation, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're basically just showing the connection of everything, how finely tuned it is, and you can start to interpret this and interpret that and how it all connects, almost like the fine constant or the universal constants that exist in the universe. And you've sort of discovered some. So maybe talk a little bit about the message, the decoding of the message, and how you got into the numbers and what they were basically trying to tell us. Because it's not a simple message. It's almost like the message from Contact, the movie, where it's not a simple, you know, left brain message of language. It's this message where you got to sit there and figure it out. And you seem to be the smart guy that actually spent the time and did it, and it fits in with some of the material we've had some conversations. It fits in with the message that came from Jim Peniston in Rendlesham Forest, that they got the same sort of thing, different mathematics, or similar mathematics, but the same sort of idea that this message gets more and more complex the more you look at it.
Yes, exactly. So the on November 1st, 2021, so that's very recent. That's when I ended up, decoding the first message from all the other energy signatures that have been interacting with me and with us. It's called the Eight Tones, this energy signature. And yeah, so on November 1st, 2021, I finally was able to make significant progress in decoding what these eight tones or eight frequencies, what was behind them. And amazingly, what I found is that by using these tones and just combining them mathematically, we can recreate a tremendous number of universal constants. And we get into numbers, the speed of light, the distance, or the diameter of the Earth, the Schumann resonance, and so on. I mean, a lot of different constants that are at the basis of all physics. So it became very obvious that there was obviously there's a supra intelligence behind this, but it's very clear that to me now that it's in a sense we're kind of trying to. They're giving us these crumbs of bread, and we need to figure it out. We need to put all these pieces of the puzzle together. In a sense, it's like we're trying to remember what once we knew. And we'll see that tonight in the slides that I'm going to present, because this knowledge about, about our universe, the knowledge about how things work, the quantum level and so on, the Earth grid, clearly that knowledge was present, many thousands of years ago. And we'll see that in some very shortly here. And so now we're getting these small pieces of the puzzle, if you will, and it's for us to put all these things together. We need to do the homework, but we're getting help along the way, and I'm going to show that again in a few minutes. There was, for instance, I had sightings recently, three different sightings on different days, distinct sightings, but these sightings was very special. And we showed that we saw it actually when we had we did the interview early January. We saw a couple of them, but this triangular craft came back again. So this sighting is the sighting of a triangular craft, and it's very special because when I saw this shape, it really intrigued me and puzzled me, and at some point I was kind of drawn to do some calculations with these three sides of the triangle that we see, and I realized that by dividing any side of this triangle by the other sides, we always either get the golden ratio phi or the golden ratio square. So this triangle is unique, really unique, and any side that we take and we divide by any other side gives the golden ratio. And interestingly, This is the piece of the puzzle that was missing in my work that I was doing on the harmonic 144, is the integration of the golden ratio to this this work. And so we'll see the result in a few minutes, but it's pretty spectacular in a sense that clearly we're getting some hints even from the sky and even through sightings, remarkably. So we're not alone.
Beautiful. So, Nicole, have you got anything you want to add about before Jimmy gets going with the latest information?
No, except maybe just to kind of fill in. Am I still giving feedback? Yeah, I can try to.
No, you're okay now.
But I was just going to say maybe the tie-in of like the series of people we've been talking to, like Gary Osborne's work, like you mentioned, and now we've talked to him and there's these crossovers of not just like working math within, your sightings and your discoveries, but it's what you guys are both coming across, like this.
Well, thank you for bringing this up.
5 degrees, the 144 harmonic resonance, finding the Schumann resonance, like you said, the golden ratio. So collaborating is happening, and this is also like, how did Gary put it? A lot of this couldn't have happened until now. Like these discoveries can't happen until all these other collaborative pieces are in play and in work. So this is actually like a building of maybe the past 30 to 40 years of research on these various avenues. Like Egypt and harmonic resonance and radio transmitting and, you know, sacred.
Well, this is so true. And thank you, Nicole, for bringing this up. This is a very important point, which I meant to bring up, but thanks. What you say is so true. For instance, one of the pieces of the puzzle that I needed to complete this work was contained in a scientific publication that was released only in 2020, of the summer of 2020. So, and that was essential to break the code, if you will. And so you're right. You see, so without this information, which was just published months ago, you know, that there's a big piece of the puzzle that will have been missing. And as you said, also, it's totally true. I mean, and thanks for Grant and Nicole connecting me with Gary, our good friend Gary Osborne, who's done amazing work on the Rendlesham enigma and the binary code related to that and the pyramid and the Sphinx and so on. Amazing work there. I'm very excited about this. And also with Sarah Bressman-Cosme, we've got a lot of good exchange of information on all this. So that's right. I mean, it's all coming together. And I have to say that this latest exchanges that we had by email and so on just pushed me even further in that direction. And so that's right. I mean, it's totally true. You see, this is all this noise that we're making around and buzzing around about this stuff that is just, it's all coming together now. And
you know, I love it. So now I'm ready for some slides. So if you just want to take over the screen and me and Grant will sit back and go, wow.
I will be happy to share my screen. I have a few videos as well. Perfect. Because it's important, it's important, I think, to provide some visual, because some of these concepts can be, you know, abstract, or, you know, we need to be able to make it tangible so people can relate what we're going to show to the real world and relate it to something concrete. So that's why I have a lot of slides, a lot of pictures and clips and so on.
When I was waiting on you guys to join, I was actually sucked into an episode of Magical Egypt, which Gary kind of helped research, you know, collaborated with the people that put that together. And I love the part where they're talking about the temple at Amarna being built to represent the Fibonacci sequence. And once you enter that temple, of course, it's the as above, so below, but it takes you through that journey of life and death. And when you get to the end of the temple, you're at the third eye. So it's amazing.
Very good. I think you need to allow me to share my screen.
Okay.
Be under security.
Oops. Yep. Gotta get through. There we go. You should have it now.
Awesome. Okay.
But they give a very good visual representation of that in episode 2, I think. So bring on the visuals.
Okay. So, can you see the screen?
Yeah.
Very good. I want to make sure also that the, when I use this full screen view, that we can see our pictures also of our videos. So, do you know, Nicole, if the recording will show the videos of us?
It should.
As long as when you open up the share screen, you click in the bottom, it'll have audio and video. So you have, there's the two little things you got to click at the bottom.
I did the audio. Let me.
Yeah. So I think that's it. Yeah. You just need the audio, and I think it'll.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So we're good to go. So let me just remove this thing here. Okay. So we're gonna talk today about a solution to the Earth grid that I'm gonna be proposing tonight. The solution to the Earth grid also goes or extends beyond the Earth grid. To my surprise, when I developed this model, I tried this model also to see if it will work with planets, for instance, and stars and galaxies, and the model works as well. So I'm very excited about that. And so we'll see. And really, to the two of the key ingredients that enable this model to work is the famous harmonic 144, which we're going to talk about briefly, and also the golden ratio. These are the two key ingredients to this. So let me just move the slide here. Okay. So let me talk briefly about the golden ratio here, because I think it's important to explain a little bit what it is, so the folks can understand what we're talking about here. You know, really nature, there are guiding principles, and you know, the way creation operates. And we see here, you know, I'm sure most people have seen this golden spiral, if you will, which is really how creation, how nature operates. You know, whether it is, the mechanic or the dynamic of the hurricanes or the galaxies and storms, or how the plant grows, or how the pine cones, and we see here the bottom left here, how the pine cones grows. This is all regulated and driven by, by nature. And nature uses very defined proportions to do that. And what we call the golden ratio, when we see here on the upper right, left corner of the screen, the hand and the arm, right? So the ratio between the hand and the arm that we see here is pretty much 1.618. That's the golden ratio. Everything in nature is proportionate typically to that. Not everything, but many things, if not most things. And so this is how things grows, right, in nature. And so this is a key factor here, the golden ratio, that we're going to be talking about. The other one here is the harmonic 144. So we've been talking about that for a while now. The 144 happens to be the frequency which I use to make transmissions, 144.1 megahertz. And through various synchronicities and insight, or if you will, inspiration, I found that this number was very special, 144. We know it's in the scriptures. You know, in the Revelation, talk about the 144,000 in Revelation. It's all over the ancient scriptures. So there's really something unique about this. Recently, and that's to get back to a bit what Nicole was mentioning earlier, there's been discoveries made recently, and one of the discoveries is actually showing how this 144 number is actually embedded in the flower of life, which is, at the foundation of creation, literally. And so I would like to re-show this short video clip here, because I think it's important it's just a couple of minutes to show the relationship between 144 and the flower of life. So give me a second here, and here we go.
Revelation regarding the flower of life and what is secretly embedded and comprised within it. There are exactly 144 components inside the flower of life, and I'd like to show you step by step how I achieved this code 144. So we're looking here at the flower of life. It's the most popular symbol in the mass consciousness in the planet, showing the mechanics, the physics of the quantum field, and how the quantum connects to the macrocosm. Geometrically, we've created the universe, but mathematically, when I count all the number of petals in here, we have 90 petals here. And if we counted all the triangles throughout this web of the universe, we have 54, 54 being half of the holy number 108. So if we said how many components in this whole flower of life, this three frequency flower of life, we have 90 plus 54, which happens to add up to 144. And 144 is really special because when the only number that is a square of the Fibonacci sequence is F12, because the 12th Fibonacci number is 144. And that's the only number that does that. The 12th Fibonacci number, when we square it, is 144. And why is 144 so important? Because according to the work of Bruce Cathy, who gave us the unified grid, the ley lines around the planet, he's saying that there's 144,000 nautical miles in a minute of arc. So where these master teachers, these people who are knowledge holders, they're teaching us that the speed of light is not what you call it, 186,000 miles per second. Now, that is correct in that system, but in the original nautical mile system that the ancients revered, the speed of light is 144,000 minutes of arc per grid second, and that's all about understanding the three-dimensional trigonometry of the Earth grid around the planet. That's why the flower of life is connected to the speed of light, because of the 144 components in the fabric of creation.
Okay. So let me take this out of the way.
Wow.
Wow is right.
Well, and I, you know, one thing that keeps just nagging that I have to mention so it'll stop nagging me is like this slide right here. You know, I think that's a beautiful representation of what you're talking about in the middle here. And I think at its base is you have that cube within a sphere. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, when you start talking about cubes within spheres, I'm automatically jumping to what Ryan Graves reports, seeing off our eastern seaboard in the United States, you know? And that's what finally came out of that, was this cube within a sphere. He was just talking about it on Australian 60 Minutes, so.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that symbol, obviously, Flower of Life, incorporates many, 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 many things. And you're right, it incorporates the hypercube that's there, which is very important, so many things. So. And that's why this is
they say, oh, these are just sightings like that. Yeah. If you're sending me a ship shaped like the flower of life, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's a message.
Yeah. So 144 is very important. And what actually another thing that brought me down this rabbit hole is that if you look at the bottom right here, when I was driving home from California to Arizona, I kept seeing this, you know, these signs, 144 everywhere. This exit sign, exit 144, is literally about a mile away from the exit I need to take to get home. And that post, this 144 mile, is just right next to it. And I have a video later. I will show that video. So, that got me interested, and I said maybe there's something special about the location where I live. I recently moved last summer to Arizona, and I'm about 40 miles from Sedona. Note that I have not moved here because of Sedona. Sedona had nothing to do with my plans, but I just ended up here. And so when I saw these signs, and I said, well, that, you know, maybe I should look into, because I'm not far from Sedona, is there something special about where I live? So I started digging into literature and trying to understand how we can calculate, you know, these things, you know, these vortex. And that's how I found that there was no good model really out there to make this calculation. It was very complex. There's just no single model, unified model to do all this. And so it was a bit complex. But I found by doing this very basic math here, if we take the Great Pyramid as the you know, the basis, if you will, the reference point, I found out that my home is at 143.6 degrees longitude west of the Great Pyramid, which is really close to this, which is harmonic 144. And when I looked at the latitude also, I found very interesting that, you know, I'm exactly 288 nautical miles north of the Great Pyramid, which is also harmonic 144. So that really struck me. So I got interested, and I said, I need to dig more into this, and then started to try to understand the world grid, you know, the famous Earth grid and how it works and what's the mathematics behind it. And it was, as I said, the experience a bit challenging because there's just no unified model out there about this. So then the next part, which I have a video I'd like to show, is the recent sighting that I had of the golden, what I call the golden ratio triangular craft. So this craft has popped in and out above my antenna array three times already. And I know it's the same craft because the dimension of the craft, the proportions are identical. So, you know, I'm assuming at this point that it is a, you know, it is the same craft. So let me show you the video here of that. And the first portion also of that video before I keep going on this, because that's gonna, you know, represent the foundation for everything else that we're going to cover tonight. The first portion of it, the video also shows a clip that I had shown a while back, but I think it's important to show it tonight again. It's a very short clip, which shows how also all these ancient sacred sites are aligned like an equator, really literally around the earth, and how these sites relate to each other mathematically and geometrically. It's really fascinating. It's really remarkable. And so let me play the video here. Here we go. So about 7 minutes total, the video.
But the mysteries don't end there. The anonymous researcher we spoke to earlier had been plotting the ancient sites on a world map.
This strip that stretches from Easter Island to Giza is actually part of a 25,000-mile-long circle.
This 100-kilometer-wide circle goes through many significant ancient sites across the globe. In Peru, it passes through the Paracas Drawing, the Nazca Tracks, Ollantaytambo, Machu Picchu, Cusco, Sacsayhuaman, and the Paratuari Pyramids. In Africa, it crosses Mali and the mysterious Dogon Lands, where they knew the stars Sirius B and C before any astronomers. Algeria, and the Tassili Nijar with its painted Martian god. In Egypt, it goes through the Siwa Oasis and its Zeus Amon Temple, and through the Great Pyramid at Giza. Next, it crosses Petra, Ur, where Abraham was born, Persepolis in Iran, Mohenjo-Daro in Pakistan, where the unreadable writing was found that is so close to the writing on Easter Island. Then it crosses sites that have always been known as the homes of the gods. Khajuraho in India, Paye in Burma, Sokotai in Thailand, Angkor Wat and Prahihar in Cambodia. And it ends with the most isolated and mysterious place on Earth, Easter Island. There is an astonishing accuracy to this alignment. Although many of these sites date from different times, most were built on the ruins of more ancient sacred sites. At some remote point in the past, someone had built a series of sacred sites on this line, circling the globe. The circle was as long as the equator, but the mystery doesn't end there. If we take this circle as an equator, then its north pole will be located here, and the triangle formed by this point, Nazca and Giza, exactly matches the shape of the Great Pyramid. The distance between Nazca and Giza equals the distance between Teotihuacan and Giza. The same is true of the distance between Angkor Wat and Nazca, and between Mohenjo-Daro and Easter Island. The distance between Easter Island and Giza is 10,000 times the golden number. The distance between Angkor and Giza multiplied by the golden number equals the distance between Giza and Nazca. And the Giza-Nazca distance multiplied by the golden number equals the Nazca-Angkor distance.
Okay. So, I
thought it was...
I thought it was important to show that because, when I saw this video clip, there's a documentary about this, which I strongly recommend. It's called The Revelations of the Pyramid. When I saw this clip, my jaw dropped, and I was a bit upset, honestly, because, you know, why are they not teaching this at school, right? Where are the archaeologists? You know, why are they not teaching the true history? Because this is not an accident, obviously, or coincidence. It's obvious. So, so this is the first portion, and let me show I wanted to show this because that's important. The visual is important because it falls exactly in the model I'm going to be showing in a few minutes. The other thing to this is the golden ratio or this triangular craft. So let me bring up the video now and show this sighting that I've had recently. That was just after, actually. Here we go. I call it the return of the golden ratio triangular craft. Now, I want to point out also here that this, what we see on the screen here, is actually the message that I broadcast. I broadcasted when I had these sightings of the golden ratio triangle, or the golden ratio triangular craft, I meant. I had other messages to it, but this one is one of the messages that was embedded in it. And if we look here on that, in that section, these coordinates, these latitude and longitudes coordinate that we see here, or the coordinates of all these ancient sites that we saw in the video clip a minute ago. See all these sites that were lined up around the Earth like an equator, the coordinates, I extracted the coordinates, I put it there in this message. Wow. Along with the relationship of the golden ratio at the bottom here, see? We saw in the video some relationship between these ancient sites and the golden ratio and so on, so I put it there here. Now, interestingly, this is what I broadcasted, and this is what the non-human intelligence sent back to us. So here it is. Here we go. Sighting occurred during the transmission.
You're shooting off your antenna, right? You've got a camera that's installed there.
That's correct. I have a camera on the back of the antenna array, so while I broadcast, we can see what's happening in the sky, which is very convenient. So I was broadcasting, you see, towards the Orion Belt, and the upper left side, there was, again, this triangular ship here, flashing in and out. This one is recent, February 5th. Wow. This was the last one. Just above the Taurus constellation here. See?
Yeah, that's Orion right in the middle of your antenna, correct?
This is, yeah, let me show you. So we got Orion Belt here. We got the Taurus constellation. See this little V here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the Sirius is at the bottom here. So this is a summary of the three sightings, December 5th, December 25th, and February 5th. All right, so let me explain a bit here what we're seeing. So what I did, literally, I took a screenshot of the screen, of my computer screen, I printed it out, and I took a simple ruler, and I measured the side of this triangle. And what I got is this. These are the sides, and we see here A, B, C. If we take, for instance, the side C, 21.35 centimeter, and we divide by side B, 13.3, we get the ratio 1.6056. which is 99.2% match with the golden ratio. The golden ratio is on top here. You see, this is 1.618, and the golden ratio squared is 2.618. If we take side B now, and we divide by side A, we get, again, the golden ratio at 99.76% accuracy. And finally, if we take the largest side here, and we divide by the smallest side, we get the golden ratio squared at 99.45% accuracy. So if I am not mistaken, this shape is unique. There's only one triangular shape which is going to give you the golden ratio in all these combinations. There's just one shape that can do that, is my understanding. So this was one of the sightings. We look at the other one here. So So this one, I flipped the picture a bit to make it easier, but this was a sighting on December 5th. This was the first one, actually. This one is remarkable because if you look at the accuracy here, the percent match, I mean, it's almost perfect, 99.98%, 99.94%. I mean, this is perfect. So there's clearly a message here, right? Wow. I don't know how much louder they need to scream for us to understand, okay?
But we need a smart guy like you to figure it out. Did you feel that you may have gotten an inspiration to do the measurements of the... Because that's the thing, as I'm saying, it takes a lot of work. It's not just a simple message where you need some intuition to know, okay, if I check this and check that, then you get these ideas that are sort of leading you to the answer?
Yeah, no, absolutely. At some point, it was in the afternoon, and this sighting of this triangular craft sighting, especially after the third time, I said, this was nagging me, this was bugging me. I just felt I needed to dig into this and draw on. So I just went to the table, you know, this urge of, right, to look into it. And wow. And again, it's interesting because the golden ratio here, if we go back to this video, right, these coordinates, you know, they are the relationship with golden ratio as well in there. And I had broadcasted these coordinates, and what they send back are these golden ratios all over the place. So,
wow. Incredible.
So there's a lot of other sightings. We showed some of them, you know, during the last interview. So I can show maybe a couple of minutes, and then we'll go back to the main subject. Yeah. See here, I mean, there's a lot of structure and geometry to this. That angle here with that angle are perfect. They match each other. We see, I mean, this is a structure. There are two structures clearly here.
Every time I see this, I keep thinking, like, this, I'm just watching history in the making here. It's like it's just unraveling. It. 100 years from now, people will understand what this is all about.
Yeah, I think, we're living historic moment with everything that's happening on the planet. And so I'll get back to the slides. And so I recreated this shape also with the computer to make sure they exist, right, that we can, these dimensions and these angles, you know, exist in the real world. So they exist, and you know, we see that it's real, it's all worked out. So the mathematics works out really well. So this sighting is spectacular in many ways, and clearly to me there was a message behind this. They're sending us information here. Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's get into the main course here of the what I want to present tonight. One of the things regarding the world grid, it's very important, you know, when we talk about sacred geometry, we're talking about geometry, obviously. And we need to be able to relate, make the connection between the sacred geometry and the real world we live in, right? The dimensions we live in. And you will see throughout the slides that I'm going to present, I'm going to be talking about the nautical mile. And this is the unit, the measurement unit we're going to use to measure distances, because this measurement unit was, when it was invented a long time ago, it was invented based on the geometry of the Earth, right? For instance, the Earth in a circle, we have, in a circle, we have obviously 360 degrees in a circle. If we take one slice, one of these degrees, and we divide that further in 60 more divisions, right, we end up with 21,600 divisions, essentially, right? 360 times 60. Now, this is how the obviously, if we look at the latitude and longitude on the planet, this is how it's divided, right? The longitude, there are 360 degrees meridians, right? And each has 60 minutes of arc. So we end up with 21,600 minutes of arc or nautical miles. So these two units of measurement, if you will, the geometry of a circle and the nautical miles, they go hand in hand together. And that's perfect for the work we're going to do. That's one of the key for the work we're going to be doing here. And of course, once we have these measurements in nautical miles, which is a measurement that exists, right? We can convert it into anything else, into kilometers or regular miles or statute miles, as we call them. Right. The other key things I want to mention before showing the results of this is that, and this is get back to what Nicole was mentioning earlier. It's like the time is now, right? And this article here was published in 2020, and this is exactly what I was looking for, because when we make Earth grid calculations, we need to take two points. We need to take a reference point of the grid, if you will, and then we look at the site which we investigate, which we want to know about, right? So we need these two points to calculate the distance between the two. But to calculate, to have a reference point, the question is, obviously, if we look, for instance, at an ancient sacred site, let's say Easter Island, right? Okay, yeah. The question is, obviously, what is the reference point for Easter Island, right? We have, and one of the best, typically what we use in these calculations is the North Pole is a perfect reference point, because all the grid, all the energy lines converge towards the North Pole. So the North Pole itself is a perfect reference point to use for these calculations. Now, what happened, we all know that over the eons and the ages, there has been pole shifts. There's been all kind of geological catastrophes or events that have changed the Earth itself, changed the grid or the Earth grid itself. And so that North Pole has changed over time, right? After a pole shift, obviously, the North Pole is not in the same place. And so this scientific article that I found, actually, they have determined in this article, they show the estimated location of these North Pole locations at different stages in our history, after pole shifts. And the way they did it is really amazing and smart. They actually used these ancient sacred sites. We saw in the video earlier, and that's why I wanted to show it. These sites are all lined up, right, in a perfect line, like an equator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once you have that, you can back calculate what the theoretical North Pole is based on that. And we saw that in the video, right? It was showing the circumference, and the North Pole was there, the kind of, in the Northwest Canada. So this is the principle we're looking at. And this was one of them, but I needed for this work to work out, I needed the information about these other North Pole through the history of the Earth. And these are coordinates that I was able to find. Okay, and so here we go. So here is some of the center point here in terms of the model that I'm proposing here. So what I found is that when we combine the harmonic 144, this harmonic of light, and we combine it with the golden ratios, we can essentially explain and quantify the lattice of the world grid itself. So in other words, if we look here in this diagram in the middle, right, if we consider, let's say, this point of origin to the left as being, let's say, the Great Pyramid, the point of origin, well, based on what we're going to demonstrate mathematically here, every segment, every interval of 432 kilometers, there's another vortex, a lattice or a vortex on the Earth grid. All these lattices on the Earth grid are separated by a distance, a physical distance of 432 kilometers. Now, I use kilometers, I use this 432 because 432 is a very special number, as we all know, right? And how I got to that number, actually, well, if we calculate here, if we look, and I'm going to use a calculator, just I want to show it to the audience here.
Yeah, audience, break out your calculators, play along.
Here you go. So I just wanted to show that it's very simple, right? If we take the golden ratio here, this 1.618, right? 1.618 is the golden ratio. And we multiply by the harmonic of light, 144. So let's do it, times 144. We get exactly 233 nautical miles, right? If you round it, you get to 233 nautical miles. So this 233 nautical miles, once we convert it into regular statute miles that, you know, we use in the United States, it equals to 268. And when we made a conversion for the kilometers, the golden ratio times 144 is equivalent to 432 kilometers. So these are the lattice of the world grid, of the Earth grid. Once we understand that, once we have that information, we can explain and predict literally where all the ancient sites on this planet can be essentially are, because they follow this energy grid essentially, right? So let me go to the next slide here to show an example of it. Okay, so this is an example here of calculations, right? In this case, I made a calculation on the famous Rendlesham UFO landing site, which I found in the book, and also I had been in contact with a good friend, Gary Osborne, who co-authored the book. And so I was intrigued and see if there was something special about where this craft landed in Rendlesham Forest. So I took the coordinates and calculated the distance between this site and the Great Pyramid. Again, the Great Pyramid in this case represents the reference point, if you will, which is logical because this is at the center of the Earth. Okay, and the distance that I calculated using online, right? There are tools online where you can punch in the coordinates, and we see that at the bottom here.
Yeah,
I punched in the coordinates of the craft and the Great Pyramid and selected the nautical miles. The N miles is nautical miles to have the distance. And it gives a distance of 1,864 nautical miles. This is the distance. Now,
what did Gary say when you showed this to him? Are you guys working together on this now?
Well, we have not had a lot of contact recently. I know he's been busy and I have been busy. I've been traveling also for work. I've not been around. So we haven't had much chance, opportunities to communicate on this, but we will.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing.
So if we look here, like, I want to show it because it's so simple that anyone can do this. It's not reserved for, very smart people, only smart people. I mean, anyone can do this. So I'm going to show you here how I calculate it, right? So let's take the 8 times the golden ratio. So 1.618 is the golden number, right? We multiply by 8, right? That's there. And then we multiply by the harmonic of light, 144. And what we get is 1,863.9, which is, once you round it, 1,864, which is exactly the distance between the Great Pyramid and the site where this UFO landed. It's 100% accuracy.
That's unreal.
I've never smiled while I've done math before. This is the first one for me. Here, look, all my math teachers from the past.
Well, the good news, the math is very simple. Eh? And the tools exist, right? You see, as I said, this little tool online, you can, there are many sites where you can calculate they call it the great circle distance between two points. You provide the coordinates and you get it. So this is the first time, and this is where what you mentioned earlier, Nicole, resonated so much, because the recent contact I've had with and you and Grant and Gary Osborne and Sarah led me to try this, right? It's just, this is how things happen, right?
And it's I know you guys haven't had full conversations about it, but it's so interesting to know Gary's side of his work too. And you guys come at this from completely different angles, but yet you're ending up at the same spots. It's like totally reinforcing each other's work. And I just think it's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
It all comes together. It's so exciting. So this is a different way to represent it here. So if we take again that distance, if we take that distance that we saw, right, 1864 nautical miles, we divide by 8 times the golden ratio, we get exactly the harmonic 144. So there's something special about this side, this craft. And I read in the book, again, I don't know all the history of it, but I read that under hypnosis that Jim Peniston mentioned that this craft was there to repair. It was auto-repairing itself at that location. Maybe there was a technical issue or something. So it's very interesting that this is the side that this UFO chose. And we'll see later on maybe why that is. So let's go to the next one here. Talking about golden ratio, I just something I found out recently. This is more a little parenthesis here, but it's kind of related to that. You know, everything in nature, you know, we talk about the golden ratio. If we look at the cell division, for instance, right, the cell is dividing here. When we represent this in terms of sacred geometry, this is the way we will be representing this cell dividing, okay? And the mathematics is interesting because if we take this segment here, this AD segment, which is the red and green segment, and we divide by the blue segment, we get the golden ratio. If we take the green segment, the green, and we divide by the red one, we get the golden ratio also. So this is how nature operates. This is how nature works. And that's why when we have this grid with this, this harmonic 144 combined with the golden ratio, well, that's how nature operates. It's nothing special, nothing secret. This is how nature operates.
Yeah, that's what I was saying at the beginning, that it all shows that it's all finely tuned. And that's, I think, where the multiple universe theory came from, is because you can't explain this. You jack the numbers by saying there's one to a thousand galaxies, and ours is the only one that had this bizarre synchronicities that are happening. It's sort of like, this just shows clearly that everything is absolutely linked and everything's connected, and everything will come down to very fine calculations that all link up when you get it all figured out.
Absolutely, exactly. This cross section is very interesting here. This is a DNA molecule, okay? And this is something they've done recently, actually. They took a cross section of DNA using special equipment and they made this photograph, if you will. And what we see here on the right side is that this DNA molecule is a decagon, right? My mouse is not working. Hold on a second here. So there are two things going on here. You see here, this is a decagon, right? And the decagon, every angle of a decagon is exactly 144 degrees. Okay? And this DNA molecule, also this pentagon, there are 10 pentagons also, which 108 degrees. Now, do you remember there were two binaural tones in the 8 tones that I decoded? There are two binaural tones. There are one 27 hertz and one was 72 hertz.
Yeah.
Well, if you take the 72, obviously we get to harmonic 144. It just times 2. Yeah. If you get 27, it keep like multiply by 2, like octaves, right? In music, you get to 108 and get and ended up to 432. So, this is all connected to this.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of a quote I sent Grant earlier, maybe 20, 30 minutes before we started, and it's that this kind of math is the language, the mathematical language of life, and to see it expressed, you know, so beautifully in your slides, it's just like keep smiling.
This is
the only thing I would point out is that people, I heard a podcaster talking about this. It still comes down to that the mathematics does not create the universe. Mathematics is just describing the universe. It's just a correlation of what nature is actually doing.
Exactly. No, absolutely. And so this shows how this is all connected. And if we take the 144, now we can imagine how there can be a resonance between this harmonic and our DNA. You know, we are an antenna ourselves. Our DNA is an antenna. And so it all works out.
Let me add something there to let you know. I had one of the honors I had in life was to actually meet with Tyler D. You know who Tyler D is from NASA, the guy who was in American Cosmic. He's the big NASA guy on UFOs, he told my friend here in Winnipeg that the NASA, some of the antennas they use are shaped like DNA. The DNA is the perfect antenna. Maybe we should try to drag him into this thing. Because when you mentioned that thing about the antenna, that's what they, what he stated, that DNA is the, it's got to do with antennas.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
Another rabbit hole. All he needs to think about is another antenna.
Like. Another rabbit hole to get down to, right? So earlier we saw, I showed you know, this calculation for the Randall Chem UFO. That was one calculation, but obviously after seeing the accuracy of it, how exact it was, I calculated it for many other ancient sites on this planet.
Wow.
And we're going to go through this in a second here, okay? But I just want to make a couple of points. This to the left are the sites that we're going to go through that's been evaluated using this model. This is the reference point we talk about, right? The North Pole. Typically, you can use a North Pole, right? These are the North Pole at different time in our history, in the Earth history, per this scientific paper that's described. Okay, and then here we see is the distance in this blue column here is the distance between the site that we're looking at and the North Pole, right? That's what we saw for this UFO, Stonehenge UFO. This is the distance in nautical mile. And here, in that column, what we see is the equivalent distance using pure golden ratio and harmonic 144. Okay? And once we use harmonic 144 and golden ratio, when we calculate physically what that means in terms of distance, we get this here. Okay, this is the calculated distance. So when we compare what we got with the model, which is here, versus what the reality is on the ground, you know, geographically, this is the percent accuracy of the model, essentially. Comparing the distance that we calculated using the golden ratio and the harmonic 144 compared to the actual physical length, if we use Google Earth to calculate it, essentially, right, the great circle. So this is how accurate the model is for all these ancient sites we're going to go through.
That's birth pretty control accuracy right there. Birth control pill accuracy, ladies. Like, hey, I have people in the chat reminding me that 108 is the number of the divine feminine. Does that mean anything to you in your exploration of this?
The 108 is an amazingly important number. So I won't talk about it because it's going to take
be
an hour. But
part it's three.
It's a sacred number. It's truly a sacred holy number. They call it the holy number. So, yeah. And it's, by the way, a pure harmonic of 432, right? Because you get 108 times 2, you get 216. Times 2, you get 432. So
beautiful. Maybe that's what we'll have you and Gary chat about together.
Yeah.
That could be a good one.
I still, every time I talk to Jimmy, it's like, I think like, I'm talking to Einstein here. he must have inspiration or be working on this all day long. It's just incredible what you're doing, Jimmy. It just absolutely blows me away.
Well, I wish I would have all day to work on this. This is just literally a side thing that I do with my free time, and I wish I could spend more time on it.
You know what you're doing if you win the lottery.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to promote it because I think this is critically important stuff here. Wow.
Yeah, well, I think this is really important because if we can understand the Earth grid and the energies, the mathematics behind it, this really opens the door to harnessing free energy and create anti-gravity. And we'll show in the picture coming why that is.
Nice.
So this is an example. So I'm going to go through this example here. This is Stonehenge. Again, using the same protocol, right? We calculate the distance between Stonehenge and the North Pole. This is the distance we get in nautical miles because it matches the sacred geometry, which we can then convert into other units after. But if we take this 2329 nautical miles and we divide by 10 golden ratio, we get exactly the harmonic 144 again. Or the other way to represent it, if we take, again, the distance is 2329. If we take 10 golden ratio times 144, we get 2330. It doesn't match at 99.96%. I mean, it's exact. Now, very interestingly, I was very interested to figure out if Tesla had figured this out. And believe it or not, the Tesla Tower is built exactly on such harmonic. So Tesla had figured out that by building his tower at at that specific location, he could tap into this free energy, because that's what he was saying he was intended to do, right? This project was to, he wanted to broadcast free energy that will be essentially propagating through the earth and probably through space. But, you know, and we always thought that the secret of Tesla was his technology, or this, you know, this coil and everything. But the other part of his secret, it appears that the location where he had built this tower was absolutely critical for this to work. Mm-hmm. Now, and it's interesting, mm-hmm. again, that we see, if we look at the table here again, the distance between the Tesla tower and the North Pole is 2,323 nautical miles. This is equivalent to 10 times the golden number times harmonic 144, 99.7% accuracy. Interestingly, if you look, Stonehenge had also 10 golden ratio distance, same as Tesla Tower, the same characteristic. It is interesting. It is possible that Tesla had calculated the distance between one of these sacred sites, Stonehenge, for instance, and the North Pole, and figured that he needed to construct his tower at the same distance to be able to end up on the same energy grid lattice, if you will, or this, you know, vortex of energy he was trying to harness energy from. I found it interesting also that in his case, these 10 times golden ratios, you know, again, we talked earlier about the human DNA, right, that had this decagon, the 10 times is 144, and we have these 10 times golden ratio here. Anyway, very interesting. And there's also a relationship, by the way, with the King's Chamber. I won't get into this right now, but the King's Chamber is also 10 qubits times the 10 qubits is essentially, a qubit is 144, by the way, an Egyptian qubit, I'll show it later. So that's an interesting.
Wow.
So if we look at another side here, well, this is, again, if you read a bit the story about this tower, it's pretty fascinating, and I won't spend too much time on it, because there are so many things I want to go through, but I strongly suggest to, if you can't get the chance, go to the net and read the story about the Tesla Tower. I think it's going to give you chills. Okay, another site evaluated here, Baalbek. Mm-hmm. Baalbek is where the largest stone in the world is located. The largest, call it man-made stone. The weight of the stone is absolutely insane. You know, this stone weighs 1,650 tons. Just to give you an idea here, and I have a video that I'm going to play right now about this, because it's really it ties into this anti-gravity thing that we talk about here. So give me a second. It's a few seconds video that talks about current technology. You know, what can we lift with current technology? Go back here. Okay, so here's the video.
Throughout Peru, ancient sites like these are filled with spectacular constructions. Just lifting these rocks up a slope like this was a real challenge.
Nowadays we could lift stones of 10 tons to a reach of maybe 50 meters, to a height of 100 meters with very large cranes, but I mean that's a huge piece of contemporary technology. What's amazing about it is that we couldn't do it now. This was 500 years ago. If you imagine the Egyptians.
Okay, so what we just saw here is that this expert engineer in this, you know, build these kind of major constructions mentioned that typically they can lift about 10 tons, you know, a weight of 10 tons to a certain reach using the largest crane that they possess, right? That's 10 tons. This rock is 1,650 tons. So we could not lift this rock today with the technology that we have. We will need to cut it in pieces.
That's so crazy.
So how could they do this in antiquity, right? And if we look here, also the Temple of Jupiter, not only got these stones, but they also hoisted them. They lifted up here at, you know, a certain height. So we could not do this today. with the technology that we have. So this really suggests here, again, right, that this location, right, there was something special about this. And, you know, was this location where they, again, harnessed free energy and create anti-gravity to do this work. It seems very logical to think this way, because all these ancient sites that we're going to see in the next slides all set up the same way with these massive megalithic constructions that most of the time we cannot even, you know, repeat today. So the Baalbek here is, again, is 15 times the golden ratio times 144, 99.7% accuracy here on this model. Here's an interesting one, the Skinwalker Ranch. I was really interested to see if the Skinwalker Ranch has something special, right? We saw these documentaries and all these stories about this high strangeness happening. So apparently there's a portal there potentially, and that's why that explains some of these UFO sightings. So I took a stab at it and calculated, mapped out this Skinwalker Ranch on the energy grid, and sure enough, 26 times golden ratio times harmonic 144, we get exactly where that ranch is, that 99.97% accuracy. So this suggests here there's a portal, there is, you know, this is very special. You know, anytime we have these energy nodes, these portals, this on the energy grid, it allows to do amazing things, but also open up portals. It seems to be the case.
Just unreal. Just leaves me speechless.
Well, I keep wanting to ask about my theorized one that's close to where I live, which is Monk's Mound at Cahokia in Illinois. They call it the Gateway to the West. It's right there in the St. Louis area. And it's the biggest natural man-made pyramid in North.
Send me the coordinates if you can. If you can send me the coordinates,
I'll try. I keep trying to get a group together to go down and do some ufology work.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it is a protected site, and you can go tour it and stand on top and everything. So
nice.
Yeah. Give me Will and Rabla. Just send them the coordinates.
Okay, fine. I'll just send the coordinates. The precise right. ones from on top.
So Coral Castle. So, of course, that was a very interesting site to run this math as well, this very simple math, actually, that anyone can do. And sure enough, 14 times golden ratio times 144 at 99.78% accuracy. So Coral Castle is built on harmonic 144, and that's where you can create these gravity harmonics, 695. If you take the reciprocal of 144, you get 695 gravity harmonics. So you can create gravity harmonics, is what I believe, from these locations. And that's how this gentleman many decades ago figured it out and was able to do this on his own.
Now, what's the mystery of Coral Castle? It's like they have the photographs of that black box he had, but nobody knows what it was.
Well, once you're, I could speculate, and I guess that's going to be another update at some point. But, you know, to get into now how to explore it and harness this energy, right, is the key thing here. Because now we have the ability to predict where we need to do it, just like Tesla did, you know, with his tower. Now we have the technology today, and you know, Tesla, it's decades ago. Now we have more advanced technology today, more means. I mean, even with the equipment I have here, I can do a lot of things. So, and the having access to this knowledge about these vortexes of energy, I think will be very, very critical for the next step in this, and will be to turn that into something that we can truly harness energy and make the world benefit from it. Other ancient sites I was interested, Göbekli Tepe, for those who are a bit in archaeology, I think this one is one of the most ancient sites in the world. It's in Turkey. It's so old that we see, you know, they had to dig it out, and it's extremely, extremely ancient. I don't believe, by the way, the dating that the typical archaeologists, tell us, because they don't... necessarily account for the fact that there's been maybe pole shift and these things that may have been there for tens of thousands of years. And so anyway, so this site is extremely old, and sure enough, you know, this 18 times golden ratio times 144 at 99.76% accuracy.
There you go. To pay attention, Jimmy Church. That's one of Jimmy Church's big sites. He talks about it all the time. So there you go, Jimmy Church.
Yep, Jimmy. Jimmy says.
Here's another interesting one here. Abydos Osirian, the temple of Osirian. So this is, again, very, very ancient sites in Egypt. It's so old that we see that the sedimentation just, you know, built around it, right? So it's really, really ancient. And the stones work, we don't see it on that picture, but the stone work is absolutely amazing. And some of these stones are many dozens, tens of tons, and we could not barely move them today. Again, this site, interestingly, this site is a bit unique here because we don't have the golden ratio involved. We just have the harmonic 144. So we take 30 times of 32nd harmonic of 144, we get exactly the location at 99.91% accuracy. The Pyramid of the Sun in Bosnia. Wow. Interesting, right? This one is not recognized formally as a pyramid there, but I was interested to see if we plug the coordinates, what we get. Once again, 20 times golden ratio times 144, we get exactly that location at 99.98% accuracy.
There's a huge push to get this site acknowledged as a pyramid. There's actually even a good documentary on it. So
here we go. Machu Picchu, obviously spectacular site, built very high up into up and down the mountains. Same thing here, Machu Picchu, of course, 28 times golden ratio times harmonic 144. Very consistent with the rest of the ancient sites. Easter Island, that's an interesting one as well. Easter Island, same thing, 26 times golden ratios at 99.91% accuracy. Saskatchewan, that's a very special site also, this one in Peru. We see these blocks that are kind of almost like mold. It's like they've been melted and resolidified together. You cannot even fit like a credit card or even a piece of paper in between. The construction is perfect, and these megaliths are massive, massive. I mean, if we look at the size of these people here, the size of this stone, for instance, I mean, again, this suggests again that at some point in our ancient history, at these very specific vortex location, these sites, they were able to harness the energy and do extraordinary things like lifting these rocks that we could not even lift today. And finally,
real quick from the chat room, could you explain like gravity harmonics to people? Could you give them like a basic, overview of this thought of being able, like from these locations, the idea is you're able to maybe manipulate gravity, correct?
Right. So in simple term, from these locations, and if we ask ourselves, is there evidence of that? Well, all the slides we just showed are evidence of that, because we see massive rocks and constructions that we could not, we could not even repeat today. So there was something unique about the sites. And so what that is that at these locations, my belief, and based on a lot of the research I've done, it is possible to extract and harness energy, free energy, from these locations. Mm-hmm. And using this free energy, we can create anti-gravity, gravity harmonics.
Right. And our friend Kronos in the chat room kind of explained it as natural gravity multipliers.
Right. So this is... this is something that we certainly can discuss more in the next update, because I can prep material and explain a bit, all this. So we'll finish with this. So the one more site here is the Pumapunku. Again, one of the oldest ancient sites on this earth. Very mysterious constructions. And this one does not involve 144. It's 2,723 golden ratios distance. And we see at the bottom here, again, it's exact, right? Measuring the distance between the Pumapunku site and the North Pole, we get 4,406. And if we take, I'm going to do it here on the in the calculator so the folks can see for themselves. So we take the golden ratio, 1.618, right, and we multiply this by 2723. We get 4,405.8. If you round that, you get exactly 4,406. So 100% accuracy on this one.
Wow.
Oh, there's one more here. Ollanta Tambo. Beautiful sight. Again, this one is a pure harmonic as well. There's no golden ratio involved. It's the 43rd harmonic of 144. 99.95% accuracy on this one.
Wow.
In my own home, this is what I mentioned at the beginning, that's why I was shocked, and that's what led me to dig more into this. That where I'm located physically here, I am sitting on a pure harmonic of light. It's not surprising because I'm just 41 miles away from Sedona, right? So that kind of makes sense. The Sphinx itself, now that's an interesting one here. You know, the Sphinx obviously is just next to the pyramid, right? But if we calculate, if we follow the same logic, right? Because we should see the same logic. Nature operates the same everywhere. The distance between the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, well, I use Google Earth here and calculated that distance was exactly 423.6 miles. So 423.6 meters. Okay, so this is exactly to the dot equivalent to 1,000 cubits, Egyptian royal cubit. So the distance between the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx is exactly 1,000 cubits. Yeah. And just FYI, I showed this in the previous interview, one cubit is equivalent to 144 megahertz. Once we convert the length of a qubit into a frequency, like it's an antenna, if you will, like if the qubit is an antenna, once we convert that length into a quarter wavelength antenna frequency, we get the frequency 144. So the qubit itself, the frequency of the qubit resonates with 144 exactly.
Wow.
Okay, so this is the section two of this presentation, I would call it this way, because this strategy that we just used, you know, for the world grid, I was interested to see if we can apply it elsewhere, because again, the law of nature are the same everywhere. And I was absolutely shocked to see that even the distance and the velocity of the planets and the stars are following these laws as well. So we can extend this to that. So let me give you exactly what this is about here. So again, we're looking at distance in millions of nautical miles this way, right? We're not talking about just nautical miles, millions of miles, millions of nautical miles. So the distance here is the distance between Venus, for instance, and the Sun, right? The distance between Venus and the Sun is 58.22 million nautical miles. That is the distance. Okay. Now, again, if we use the same strategy here, we're gonna make an example here, right? I found out that again, all these distances are perfectly matching golden ratio proportions. So, if we take 36 times golden ratio, so let me do it on a little calculator, 1.618, right? And we'll multiply this by 36. We get 58.25. This is 58.25. Compare that to the distance, it's 99.95% match. So when we do this for all the other planets, you know, we do it for the Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Pluto. Again, we see here the distance, the actual. In the middle, in yellow, the corresponding golden ratio proportion. And then when we calculate it based on the golden ratio proportion and the percent accuracy or the percent match. So
did
this
you
is...
Do it, did you do it for the belt of meteorite type stuff, the supposed planet? Maybe you can do that down the road just to see
Yeah.
Although you wouldn't have an exact whether, because that's the thing, is where you can predict where a planet will be or whether was a planet.
Well, we can predict and these I need to mention here also that these are it's quite remarkable. These are average distances to the sun. So, you know, the distance between obviously a planet and the sun change all every second, right? Because often the orbits are maybe elliptical.
And
things like that. So what we see here is the average. And so this is what we can essentially predict. The equilibrium of a planet in its orbit, right, around the sun, in its perfect equilibrium, in its average distance, if you will, well, it's all based on golden ratio proportions. Exactly. I mean, it's exact. Wow. And interestingly, I found very interesting also the Earth here, right? If we take 144, let me take this here, right? If we take the 144 here and we divide by the number of golden ratio proportions, right, the distance of the Earth to the Sun, we divide by 50, we get 2.88, which is divided by 2, also 144. So the Earth is very special. The Earth is very special here. You see, it's perfect harmonic for 144.
Perfect now, life, what?
Now, let's push life this further. Let's push this a bit further here. Now, we're talking about planet, right? Let's go a bit bigger. Let's go big. I was really curious to see if the movement of galaxies will follow the same pattern in constellations, let's say the Pleiades, for instance. So I retrieved on the net their velocity or their speed, you know, which is the speed at which they move. And this is in velocity here is the speed essentially in, again, this is in nautical miles per grid second, right? I need to mention here for the folks who are a bit more technical, the second here, the day is defined by 27 hours a day, not 24 hours a day. 27 hours is, you will find it in the Indian, it's in the ancient astrology, you will see everything is based on 27. 27 is the cosmic time. Let's put it this way. Okay. 27 is the cosmic time. Now, when we calculate, you know, from the net and we convert this speed and from kilometers or mile to nautical miles per grid second, this is what we get. 288, 144, and 2.88. So the Milky Way is traveling at 288 nautical miles per grid second, which is exactly an harmonic 144, right? Divide by 2, you get 144. Exactly. It's exact. The galaxy of Andromeda also. Andromeda is interesting. It is actually traveling at 144 nautical miles per grid second. It's insane. I mean, it's almost ridiculous at this point. And the Pleiades, the cluster velocity is 2.88. But that's a factor, again, 100 here, but it's harmonic 144, exactly. And for those, I have a clip here I would like to show, which is very important. The dynamics, what's happening in space, often we don't, what we've been told, what we've been taught at school is really wrong. And I really think that in some way they kept us thinking really two-dimensional. But if we look here, this what you're going to see here is the true movement of planet and stars in space. So look, this is how our solar system evolved here, right? This is how we've been told, right? We say, hey, we rotate around the sun. But the reality is that the sun is moving at extremely high speed in space. Right. And the planets which are evolving around the sun are rotating in a vortex like this. Everything is in a vortex. Yeah. So going from two-dimensional to a three-dimensional pattern here.
Yeah.
And that's why the movement of the galaxy, what we talked earlier, or the movement of stars, is it's happening in space, right? We're moving along this galactic disk in the Milky Way. Okay. Okay, so let me just back here. Oops.
Okay,
let me see here if I have other slides. Oh yeah, one more thing here that I discovered. This one is really interesting. Okay, so hold on a second. The Earth Moon. I need to look at the Earth Moon. Okay, so the other thing also I found actually a few days ago. The average distance of the Moon around the Earth, right? The average distance is 384,000. I'm sorry. The average distance is 384,400 kilometers. This is the average distance between the Moon and the Earth. Again, the Moon is not. It's a bit an elliptical orbit, and so it's not always the same distance. Now, if we take again the harmonic 144 this time, and we do the square of it, right? You square 144, we get 207.36. And in harmonics mathematics, you can move the decimal left or right, right? So we add a zero to this here. So this is 207,360 nautical miles. Once we convert that into a kilometer unit, we get 384,031. So if you compare that distance versus what's actually, the calculation from the orbit, we get a match of 99.9%. So essentially, the distance of the Moon from the Earth is exactly 144 square. So this leads me to the last or third portion of this presentation. I have a little clip here. So this led to an experiment. So I mentioned a few days ago, or when we had Grant a few days ago, that I ran this experiment with one of my good friend David Cerita. So we did a transmission. I broadcast it from here, Arizona, and using the Moon as a passive reflector. Broadcasted with 250,000 watts on 432 megahertz and 144.1 megahertz, because obviously these frequencies are in perfect harmony with the harmonic 144, which we talked about, right? And this harmonic theoretically should resonate with not only the pyramid, but also all the ancient sites that are located on the planet. So on August 8th, 2021, last summer, we did the broadcast, and interestingly, as I mentioned before, the days prior to the broadcast, we've had so much insight and inspiration, let's call it this way, even during the broadcast and after. And so it was very interesting. It's really truly as if we were tapping into a portal. And as we were broadcasting sacred geometry and other tones and other frequencies to activate the pyramid and the other sites, it seems like what we're getting in return was information, right, through consciousness. And so when we did this transmission, so David had a friend, a contact of his, who live actually in just right next to the pyramid. It lives close in Egypt. And so while we broadcast it, we had communicated the exact time of the transmission when we will be broadcasting. And this gentleman had access to a very special technology. He called it a Eulerian technology, Eulerian video magnification. I am not an expert with this technology. That's something I need to study more. But from what I understand is that it can essentially detect the frequencies, and if you look here, the frequencies, it says between 6 and 9 hertz, you see? Yeah. So this is the frequency range of the Schumann resonance. So this technology, this video technology, has the capability of showing frequencies in the 6 to 9 hertz range, and there are other ranges that this camera is able to detect, but the one I was interested in too when I made the transmission, I wanted to see if we could trigger by broadcasting these frequencies of the Moon that they will resonate with the ancient sites and resonate with the energy grid on the planet Earth, that it will trigger some kind of reaction, right? Wow. It kind of makes sense. And now, and I just found out, as I said, literally 3 days, 3-4 days ago, that the Moon itself the distance, the average distance of the moon to the Earth is exactly the 144 square, which is also in perfect harmony. So the frequency utilized, 144 megahertz, with the distance of the moon, and when the ancient sites were all resonating at these frequencies, that was the objective of this experiment. So I'm going to show what happened during the transmission. Now, I have not made this, I have not shown this material yet, because I'm not making a formal claim with this material yet. I'm not ready to make a formal claim, because to make a formal claim, I need to make many other experiments to eliminate possibilities of false positive, and you know, there's other, you know, you need to do due diligence. So I'm not making a formal claim today, but I'm just going to show what's been recorded, okay? And
the story will
follow the story. So this is what happened during the actual transmission. So we see a glow.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
So this was in the 6 to 9 hertz, you know, Schumann resonance range. So this is it.
You saw it first here.
Yeah. You almost see more than just that.
Or play that again, Jimmy.
Oh yeah, sure. Let me play it again here.
Yeah, let's loop that a few times. Got to soak it in like a mandala.
Here we go.
And see, like, to me, that's what you see around the... when the craft, when they like pop in and out, or you get the crazy blinkies, like.
That is something else.
So it's interesting because you see the Great Pyramid itself is located on a harmonic 144, right? The site where I am broadcasting from in Arizona, as I showed earlier, my home is located on such harmonic, on an energy node as well. And the moon is in perfect resonance in terms of distance, right? It's 144 square is the distance.
And so
this is what happened. So again, I need to make, you know, more tests. There's more work that needs to be done before, you know, making any claim, but this is the kind of work that you know, we're doing here, that we're excited doing, and we'll see what that's gonna take us.
All right, the chat room is going a little crazy with delight. They're wanting to know if you know of any locations in Australia, Korea, or if you jumped into the Bermuda Triangle.
That's a good question.
For part 3, 4, and 5.
Actually, the math is really simple. If anyone who saw the presentation tonight, you can almost do it, you know, yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I'm going to do in the coming days and weeks, of course, is to map out more sites and so on, and try to recreate the actual grid. You know, the grid has changed over time, you know, with the pole shifts and various geological things. There's a lot that happened, and it's there's no good model today, really. There are good models, but I would say they are incomplete, right? Because we cannot predict exactly where these nodes are. But now with this technique, which is extremely simple, you know, we can predict and calculate exactly where these energy nodes are. And so, you know, anyone can do it. And I would certainly, you know, share the work that I do on that.
And can you go review just for a second how you came up with the 144 for the frequency to use? And
In terms of my transmissions? Well, yeah. Initially, I must say that frequency, I chose it because the amateur radio band is between 144 and 148 megahertz. And so I needed to pick a frequency within that range. The space communication is happening at a lower portion of that band. And so I literally randomly picked 144.1 megahertz at the time.
Yeah.
That was random. And I found out after the fact that...
You thought it was random.
Right. I thought it was random. That's right.
Just like moving to Sedona was random, totally random. I love it.
No, that's right. This exit 144. Actually, let me show you this video. I think you're gonna. This is a. I think you're gonna enjoy. Give me 1 second here. This is a fresh video. I just shot Friday. I'm just trying to find here. Okay, here we go. Let me share my screen. So it shows I was actually driving back from California to. I'm gonna share the screen. Give me a second here. Okay, so I was driving back from California to Arizona, and I said, okay, well, I'm gonna record this sign because I was just to get home. So you can see for yourself a bit what's happening, and I was getting inspiration also at the time. So here we go.
Here it is, exit 144. I'm just about to take my exit to get home from California, driving home to Arizona. And here it is, exit 144. And the mileage just follows just right.
Oh, the mileage matches.
Next to it, just after it. Here we go.
The mileage and. It matches also.
144, as you can see here. And interestingly, minutes ago I had some inspiration, let's call it this way, and I was, you know, writing on a paper, and I couldn't find a paper, so I took this piece of towel.
There's the napkins again, Grant.
Put the towel in.
That's the napkins.
Put down what came to mind in terms of link or relationship between the fundamental light harmonic 144, the golden number. Here it is. Here we go. Exit 144.
So,
okay, and so I am on the highway 89 north here.
Jimmy, while you still have your screen share open, will you go back to the slide where it kind of showed the grid across the world? I think it was down in the corner of one of your first slides that you showed. That might give people an idea of how it overlaps over certain parts of the globe. Yeah, it was that one down.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I like this graphic as well, because if you look close enough, you can see the certain sections of the Fibonacci spiral. Like, you can see where it would naturally start to form that nautilus shape. So
that's right. Yeah, so this,
it looks,
see,
like
this is
right
where,
in the middle it, of Australia.
So yeah, so let me get this back here. Okay, so yeah, so this is what I had tonight in terms of update. To be honest, all the work that you've seen has materialized. Most of the work that you've seen has materialized over the last 2 weeks, literally. That's how fresh it is.
Wow.
Okay, so I need to internalize this information, and I'm sure the audience, there's a lot of smart people out there, much smarter than us, than I, and so. You know, I'm sure there's going to be folks out there who are going to be able to grab that information and run with the ball and go in their own rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because it can go in different directions, right? The Earth grid itself is massively important. I cannot emphasize the importance enough. You know, our cosmic family, the ancients, they've left these sites on this Earth, this massive megalactic structure at this specific location for very specific reasons. And once we can remember who we really are, we're going to have access to free technology, free energy, and anti-gravity, and we'll be able to reach the star, and that's where we are right now. We are really at that point. I think the time is now. The evidence are pointing the fingers in that direction. And so it's all coming together, and I cannot thank you enough, Grant and Nicole and all the others, to connect us together, right? This is how it works, and this is how we can make progress. And I have to say, a lot of the what happened over the last 2 weeks that I did this work came as an outcome of the fact that, you know, you connected me with Gary and others, and we started talking about these things, and this is how ideas are generated, and
yeah.
It just creates a momentum, right?
And this is really helpful. I do want to note, like, this is living ufology to me. You know, I think experiencers coming together and finding each other and being able to collaborate their ideas is what is going to push this high strangeness forward to the rest of the world. And so it's my pleasure, Jimmy, at any time you want to give us an update. I think you just have to say when at this point. And yeah, I'd love to set up a chat maybe with Gary and you together and just let you guys go. That would be fabulous. So we'll definitely be in touch.
Gary is doing great work, and there's a lot of good, great folks out there. Right. So, and yeah, I mean,
why don't you let our audience know how to find more of your work or get a hold of you if they start having synchronicities based on what you're showing? So, yeah, tell everybody how to get a hold of you.
Sure. Well, I'm fairly active, online on my YouTube channel. I have all my videos, so they can, you know, reach me out there, or through Facebook. I post a lot of material there once in a while. I'm putting a new site together. It's going to be on www.myfirstcontact.com. So it's going to be coming up. So myfirstcontact.com. I'm going to put a lot of material out there and all the stuff that I'm presenting. I will make it available there. And so it's coming in a few weeks. Wonderful. And so, we'll keep the conversation going for sure.
Yeah, and I'll put links to those sites and how to find you in our description after this video. But thank you guys so much. Grant, was there anything you wanted to wrap up with?
I just want to say, as I do almost every time I talk to Jimmy, that it's an honor. I feel like I'm watching history unfold. This is amazing stuff. And it may not, it's like anything else in ufology, that it may take a while for people to suddenly catch on. But I feel honored to have been able to talk to you and to be one of the first people to see it. And I think we'll try what we can. You know, we've now got Gary, and then Gary's got a guy from Egypt that he's working with that he doesn't want to make public. So I think it's just a number of more people will be coming online, and they'll be able to understand what you're saying. And I think it's just a matter of time till you guys spell it out. I think you're on to something incredibly important, and I'm just absolutely honored that you chose to talk to me and to some of my friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Grant. Thanks so much for, again, providing this beautiful platform. You're really one of the few who really take the time to listen to the experiencers and the folks, the normal folks out there. So I really appreciate you helping us and giving us a voice. And it's exciting times. I'm very, very excited. I think it feels like it's just the beginning now. It's just like this opens the barn door to so many other things, right?
I love it.
And if you get a time, like you look at the weather or whatever, whenever you're going to do the live broadcast, let us know. We'll go live, and we'll follow that event, because we couldn't do it tonight, but that's something I think you're planning to do, and let's see what happens there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the wind was extremely strong tonight. It will have literally destroyed my antennas. And so, but we'll reschedule. We'll announce it so people can see live what's happening. So it should be fun. So I look forward to it.
And you guys in YouTube land, like, subscribe, and share. Share this video with people like-minded, that'll find it interesting. And that's how we will fire the grid. Is that what our friends are saying?
That's interesting, you see, because, I just realized this fire the grid day, transmission day. I mean, the fire the grid, even though we did not transmit tonight, it happened today worldwide, right? Millions of people. And so it's interesting that on the very day of fire the grid, we presented a potential solution to the Earth grid itself that may lead to free energy and anti-gravity. Interesting.
All right. Thank you guys so much. And we'll be in touch soon, everybody. This is
thank you.
Been thank you.
Amazing. Yeah, thank I'm you, like, have a good
amazing.
Night, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Amazing. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.